In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. In the wake of calls to remove monuments at national battlefields and as cranes remove statues of Confederate generals, a shift is also taking place amid the telluric currents and ley lines. If you're a regular listener to this show, you know the monuments and statues are not randomly placed. In fact, when our returning guest plotted them on the map, a larger pattern emerged very quickly. The telluric line of interest is known as the Acadian bandwidth. Cities and places such as Boston, New Haven, New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., Charlottesville, Atlanta, Stone Mountain, Georgia, and New Orleans are on this line. As you would guess, the Acadian ley line is full of monuments of various type, imbuing consciousness that include the massive obelisk in D.C. and multiple memorials from various wars. Activity on this telluric line is lighting up right now, with change of consciousness. In terms of rallies, such as one in Charlottesville, Virginia, and recently in Boston, and Boston is known as the anchor city in this particular line. This is not by chance. The power structure that identified and placed the monuments and statues to resonate in the communities are aware of the energy line influence on consciousness and are involved in orchestrating this shift right now. Notice how this occurred before the solar eclipse. Peter Shampoo says, during the solar eclipse, the ley line energy temporarily stops flowing, and it's an opportunity to reset ley line energy influence. There are many questions. What types of rituals will be conducted during this moment, and by whom? What intention and type of consciousness will be competing as a replacement on this urban energy bandwidth? Remember the unique occult research of past guest and author Matthew Deleuze. He said, quote, "When we surrender our power to their monuments, we surrender our power to them and their masters. It's all about surrender and wanting to be a slave in this world," end quote. He also pointed out how Freemasons within secret societies are implanting symbolism all over the planet right now, and it's leading up to a certain day. We're going to pull back and get a view from space while looking at the Earth grids and ley line bandwidths that carry a specific telluric current, which corresponds with potential monument and statue removals. In the past 8 years, we've discussed in depth the nature of ley lines, telluric energy, in connection with megalith builders, with many guests such as Dr. Ross Hamilton, Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, Peter Shampoo, Matthew Deleuze, and former professor at the University of Calgary, Dr. Carmen Bolter. We're lucky to have Peter Shampoo joining us again. He's one of the top ley line researchers. He's what's known as a geographer and earth keeper. His work brings the individual and community into relationship with our living planet. Discoverer of earth rings, he is a leading researcher in the field phenomena of ley lines, earth grids, and nature's geometries of scale. Since the 1990s, Peter has turned his originally simple geographic observations into the evolving spiritual art and science of what he terms geography, the patterns of our living, sentient earth in alignment with each person's unique path through life. His books include Gaia Matrix and Moon Rivers. You can find them at his website, geometryofplace.com. Peter, welcome back to Another News.
Thanks, Jeff. Great to be back.
Peter, would you list some of the monuments that are considered being removed or have been removed that exist on the Acadian ley line?
Yeah, sure. It's quite exciting times along the Acadian ley line. When you refer to the Acadian ley line, you're speaking of this alignment of cities along the east coast of the United States through Boston, New York City, Baltimore, Atlanta, and it goes very close to Charlottesville. Actually, the Acadian Ley actually goes right through Monticello, the state of Thomas Jefferson. Many of these monuments, these Confederate monuments and all kinds of monuments are, of course, in these cities, Washington, D.C. being one of them. There's Washington Monument, a big one there. So there's a current there that is a trans-Western cultural alignment, if you will, running from New Orleans all the way up through New York City, Boston. And it actually continues on over the pond in a same geophysical and cultural alignment in through Europe and down into the Middle East. These monuments kind of hold a frequency, they hold a thought pattern. So by placing these war memorials at the center of town commons, and it ends up generating a frequency of war for the community. So, I mean, you go to any town common and you'll have a war memorial there honoring the people that sacrificed their lives for the good of the country. But that's the only way you can be honored in this country is through this, through war, through death, through human, sacrifice to the corporations to, make sure that business is operating properly. But it sets a frequency of death within the community itself without having kind of, balancing monuments of, say, someone that's, was a great inventor in that town. And, that would inspire the people to invent. Right now, what would the inspiration of the center of our towns is warfare, so the only way to be a hero is to go out and, shoot or kill or be killed. These old monuments are just holding on to these old frequencies, like in particular down in New Orleans, there was littered with Confederate monuments.
Did you find it interesting here, Peter, that the lineup of some of these cities were on the Acadian ley line? And can you talk about how these are not randomly placed? And would this change and rearrangement affect consciousness?
Absolutely. Absolutely, it's affecting consciousness. And I think it's affecting it in a good way. By removing this, that there's some healing that can happen. See, New Orleans is a Masonic city. It was designed by Masons. The fingerprints all over it, with phi proportions and radial street patterns and convergences at the patterns where they all converge have a monument, have a Confederate monument, Jeff Davis or Robert E. Lee or someone at these really critical points in the city. The Masons were very, very knowledgeable about this, how to place energetic objects in the land in order to set a frequency, set a resonance within the city itself. So, these folks that were trying to keep the war alive and never heal the wounds of war have placed these monuments at such critical positions within the city of New Orleans that it creates a constant state of tension between the black population certainly of New Orleans and Johnny Rebs. Removing those will free up a whole lot of energy along these ley lines in this particular Acadian ley. So I see it as a healing, because we're kind of like trying to move away from this culture of war by removing these monuments of war, off of these critical geomantic places along the Acadian Lay. It's freeing the whole line up for more creative expression, more open connection between people. As long as we're still fighting that war, we're still at odds. And certainly, the red and blue and the red and blue states and all this, the polarity that we're seeing happening in places like Charlottesville is kind of the result of this continuing hatred that just, it's like almost self-defining. They consider themselves a conquered land. And even though it's a homogenized culture at this point in time, there's still that kind of subtle background of things. So that's kind of my read of it.
I wonder what your suggestions would be in terms of what to replace these monuments with?
Well, if they need to be replaced at all. Yeah, public parks are always good. To me, it should be something of a positive nature. You know, if we want to have life, love, and community, and, you know, we want safety for our children and grandchildren, it's kind of important to stress peace. So something like 237 of our years have been spent, as the United States has been spent at war. You know, we are a warring culture, and we make our money from war. We make our money from suffering, that's our first buck right there. And if it wasn't for war, we'd be a poor country. You know, we need to put in place of these war monuments, we need to place some kind of peace monument or something more empathetic and more sympathetic towards the common good of man.
I'm wondering if we can go through cities on the Acadian ley line so listeners can get a better understanding of where that line is and how it travels through the United States.
Yeah, your listeners will get out a map of the continental United States. You'll see if you then take a ruler and put the ruler on the page, one end at Boston and the other end down at New Orleans, and you'll see that it passes right through New Haven, New York City, Trenton, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, D.C., Monticello, I mentioned that earlier, Atlanta, actually it's Stone Mountain, Georgia, and which is one of the, one of the monuments you're not going to remove. it's a whole mountainside carved with Jeff Davis and everybody, and which is also a site for the Ku Klux Klan gathering. Yes. And then it continues on down to New Orleans. But that line actually goes to Mexico City as well, down to Teotihuacan. So it's this telluric current that's linking Teotihuacan's pyramid right over the pond through Brussels, site of and capital city of the European Union, right through Waterloo and Battle of the Bulge, and over there in Europe, it's kind of the line across in line in the sand, the Franco-German border. Goes right through Kosovo and all that battle zone through there and down into Syria. It's this line of inflammation, you could say, in terms of acupuncture, for instance. We have these meridians in our bodies, and there are these nodes along these meridians where the needles can be placed to generate health or disease or however you want to manipulate it. And having these monuments on these particular sites is carrying that war frequency over the pond from Europe and right down into the sacrifice zones of Teotihuacan, where thousands of people were put to death there in that Pyramid of the Sun on a nice Saturday afternoon. So there's all this blood and carnage, and human sacrifice is just so repetitious here. And it goes over into the land of the Canaanites, where that's where human sacrifice was really taken to a next step over there, and in the worship of Baal, they were sacrificing the firstborn sons, part of a family's duty to this god of rain, but it ended up being a god of human sacrifice. There's other monuments, like in the middle of Washington D.C. There's the where this Acadian lay goes through is the Organization of American States, which was the precursor to the UN. And it's right at the center of the Washington, D.C. diamond. And in the back courtyard of that is a big death mask. And in front of it is the god of human sacrifice, Xochipelle, in sports. And he has a number of other things that he's attributed to, drugs, rock and roll as well.
Regarding the Canaanites, I know the Acadian line goes through Connecticut, and there is a town called New Canaan. I was wondering if there is a relationship there.
Well, the relationship is that when early settlers were coming over from, you know, from Europe, they were naming all these towns after communities in the Middle East, the biblical cities, some gone, some present. So that by a sound, you know, a name carries a frequency, carries a resonance. So if you have a name, you know, Jerusalem or Canaan, it has a relationship to the other Canaan, the other Jerusalem. So it draws, it's a conversational connection. It's like dials up a connection. New Haven, while it's not a New Haven, Connecticut, while it's new, you know, Haven is not a biblical term. The way they laid out the city of the original city, which is now pretty much the Yale campus. So New Haven was designed after the New Jerusalem, as it's described in Revelation. So there's this intention that was placed in the land, in the original settling of the land, to create the New Jerusalem here in America. So these namings that they had were all about creating that. And a lot of the settlers that were coming over here, of course, were escaping religious persecution and were, you know, fanatics and, you know, placing these, you know, wild intentions via their diverse religious beliefs. But New Canaan, Connecticut's kind of up by the Massachusetts border, not so far from Great Barrington. In the northwestern corner of the state.
That's close to where you used to live.
Yeah, not so far at all. That's why I know it. Fairly wealthy community. Meryl Streep lives up there.
Oh, wow. There are other significant ley lines and latitudes that I think are worth mentioning, especially with Charlottesville in the center that you had pointed out to me earlier in an image that you sent to me through email. And you used something called the pilot wheel. Can you talk about that particular map and the significant points around Charlottesville?
Yeah. Charlottesville is right on. I see it is right on that ley line outside Charlottesville, Virginia. Interesting. A very liberal community, kind of enlightened. It's got a university there. It's part of this wheel that I came up with back in 99 when I was writing my book, Gaia Matrix. Still available through my website at geometryofplace.com. So this wheel, what I do as my work is to, actually I'm embarking on writing a new book on these earth rings. The work is to identify all the earth rings on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular earth ring that I had discovered is centered on an ancient native sacred site called Pilot Mountain. It's a long extinct volcanic plug that's been eroded down, and it's just like it looks like a butte, you know, flat top, sheer cliffs coming up with, you know, kind of a small version of Devil's Tower. You know, right out there on the Piedmont, it's all by itself out in the Piedmont. So if you look at that as a centric structure, and the arc of the coast of south north in Virginia, going up through the, you know, that curve, if you can imagine it or see it on your maps that you have out, that curve from Parris Island down in the southern part of South Carolina coast up to Washington D.C. Generates a curvilinear form that is a reference to that center point of Pilot Mountain. So when you complete that circle, it goes through Stone Mountain, Georgia, and Washington, D.C. This particular ring has a strong polarity about it. So Stone Mountain, Georgia is on the opposite end of the ring as Washington, D.C., where the Marine Corps training is at Parris Island. It's opposite Moundsville, West Virginia, which is the site of the Hare Krishna temple.
Hmm.
So you have, you know, these two warrior types, you know, the Krishna, the blue man, and the Marines in an opposite spectrum. So in the dividing line, the kind of east-west line going through that, the Marine Corps to Moundsville, Hare Krishna temple is a north-south line, and the east-west line follows along the Missouri Compromise, which is the 36-30 parallel. I call it the slave latitude, or perhaps the sovereignty latitude. And this particular latitude goes right through the New Madrid Fault, and it's a very a lot of historic stuff has occurred along there. The the New Madrid Fault is a very large geophysical expansion zone that will eventually tear the whole country apart and create a waterway between Quebec City down to New Orleans, opening up that as like a seaway. But that's a few million years down the road yet. This mm-hmm. particular line is the line that divided north and south. It was really the north of that line was slavery, or south of that line was slavery, and north of it was anti-slave. So there's still that line in the sand, in that, and it's a line that divides us as a people. So what I'm doing is creating these energetic wheels, medicine wheels, healing to try to heal these cultural divides that we have by making a matrix, a circular matrix that is in resonance with the geophysical Earth. And is keyed by cultural sites, as I mentioned. It takes this and blends it into a holon, into a holistic form that then operates together. So, and there's a healing that would happen along this line. So it's seeking patronage to accomplish this. There's a lot of people that are interested in, you know, working these rings that I've developed into medicine wheels.
What do you need exactly, Peter?
Well, I need an expense account and a crew cab truck that can hold a lot of rocks.
Okay, that sounds pretty easy to get in some ways, but I wanted to ask you, are you the originator of these wheels and putting them in place in terms of harmonizing these energies?
Yeah, this is I'm a pioneer in this. These large scale wheels, there's one other man, that Blue Thunder LeBeau, he's now crossed over the other side, and he did some work with large scale medicine wheels. But he was kind of using, sorry to say, Blue Thunder, but they seem kind of arbitrary. Where the ones that I'm doing are locked right into the geophysical and social, political, cultural matrices of the land. So, like the Great Lakes, I'm out here in Allegan, Michigan, working on the Nature's Cathedral, which is turning the entire Great Lakes, the circular form that is the Great Lakes, into a sacred site, into a... think holy water. That's the by thinking holy water, by putting intentions and prayers out, and having a collective consciousness that recognizes these wheels and sees the kind of the blending of energies that are happening within these wheels, kind of projecting this the sense of the sacred upon them. The waters respond. The waters are very sensitive. If we can get a collective looking at the Great Lakes as holy water, then they become holy water. They're, holy water is made by intention, by a priest blessing them. If we as a people in our own holy sovereignty, we can, project our feelings of love and holiness towards the waters, then those waters are informed that they are then a vital, life-giving, loving force within the waters of the biosphere. And at 21% of the water volume, fresh water volume for the planet, this level of holiness then spreads into the greater biosphere so that we have this transformation of the planet.
Peter, that's really ambitious, and it makes sense to me because it corresponds with the work of Dr. Konstantin Korotkov, who pointed out that water is the most abundant element in the universe, and of course, the most sensitive in terms of it can be affected by intention, as you pointed out. And I was going to ask you why you chose the Great Lakes, and you said it was 21%, did you say?
Yeah, 21%.
Of the world's fresh water?
Yes.
That's an interesting project. And have you seen any feedback so far from your work?
Well, last summer we started placing organites at strategic points around the Great Lakes, which we continue to do this summer. Since then, the lakes have risen a foot. Just over the winter, it rose a foot. Because of that, they're able to put on heavier cargo ships are sailing the waters now, and they're actually the currents are so strong they're having trouble controlling the boats. The Great Lakes is a really large area of water to raise a foot in 6 months' time. This is a historic high. It's never been this high. Never been this high in recorded history. Well, I don't know. You know, it's just circumstantial evidence, but we put this in, and the water seems to be responding already. Our intentions when we put in these organite discs were to restore the waters and bring them to health. And so to do that, the lakes needed to be flushed out. And in order to flush it out, they needed more water. So if you look at the Great Lakes watershed, the streams that feed into it are smaller than the lakes themselves. You know, it's just so where this water came from, it's got to come from up underneath the earth. It's got to be like the earth is like releasing more water for the into the lakes in order for it to rise that much. So it appears that the lakes are already responding in a good way.
That's interesting. I was in Vancouver and visiting family. And we were out by Pitt Lake, and it's surrounded by very steep hills and a few thousand feet high. I noticed that there were waterfalls. It looked like snowpack, but when you look closely through binoculars, it was a waterfall at the top of the hills. Where is this water coming from? It's certainly not from the rain. There's no snow. And I suspect that it was coming up from underground and being pushed up through underground. So just connecting to what you said about the underground water.
You're right. Yeah, there's a lot of water down there. A couple of years ago, there was a discovery of the ringwoodite layer of rock about 200 miles down that's saturated with water. All this particular mineral, it's like 15% water. So whenever there's a volcano, the waters from this mantle boundary, upper and lower mantle boundary, is drawn up onto the surface. And right now they estimate there to be four oceans, that's all the oceans of the earth, right? Combined, there's four of them in this ringwoodite layer. So water appears to be the formative substance of the universe. The astrophysicists theorized that water is what actually coagulates planets, planetoids, and solar systems. And whatever water touches, it informs of its geometry, and then that gets manifested into reality. So if you will, water has a bonding angle of 104.5. That's ideal. Water can alter its bonding angle of the H, the two H's bonding to the O, from 90 to 120, but 104 is considered the ideal. With that simple geometric, you can generate all the sacred geometries that exist. So you can generate all the geometries that you see in nature. That's, you know, that's what a sacred geometry is. You know, and the cathedral builders of Europe used this sacred geometry of water in order to have the cathedrals resonate, to lock the cathedrals into the matrix of nature, to have them become part of the matrix of nature, so that when you ring the bells and do this symbolic ritual, you know, instilling this Christ consciousness into the land itself, because the fabric of the building is the fabric of the world. Similarly, what we're doing with the Great Lakes is using these geometries of water as a pattern all around the lakes, in order to inform the waters of what their ideal bonding structure is. And by getting into that ideal bonding structure, they become clean.
A past guest, John Hutchison, had gone out to the Gulf of Mexico with intention to clean the water out there, and he was sending frequency out through loudspeakers. And he was also seeing that whirlpools were starting to be created, and he said that whirlpools were a sign that the water is cleaning itself. Is that similar to the work that you're doing?
Yes. You know, vortexes are all part of this work that we're doing, replicating that form that is the gravity field, the quantum gravity field, the background field. It's the same geometry as one's eye. So if you want to know what the background quantum gravity field looks like, just look at your eye. And that same gravity field is reflected in the geometry of Stonehenge and many other of these ancient monuments that relate directly to the vortextual nature of creation. So, you know, when we put an organite into the ground, we usually surround it with 9 stones that are based on a earth energy vortex being 1 to 5. So if you have like a 6-inch center ring of organite, you would make a 30-inch wide diameter medicine wheel in which to contain it. And this, we use this geometry because that's the geometry of a natural earth energy vortex as determined via dowsing. You can't really see it, but, you know, with the naked eye, unless you're really clear sentient and everything. But dowsing, you can get these various layers that are within this. But what we use is this thing called the Holy Grail Vortex, which a friend, Mary Hardy, who I'm staying with out here in Allegan, at her, we have a little pyramid out here behind her garage that we use to interface with the Great Lakes. But that's another matter. We use the Holy Grail Vortex as an intentional overlay. So the Holy Grail Vortex has 2 counterclockwise spinning rings in the middle and 2 clockwise spinning rings on the outside. And what we do is we use the prayer of the Great Invocation, and it generates a field, a vortextual field that draws in all those intentions that are stated within that the Great Invocation.
Could you give a couple examples of some of the attacks you've gone through as a result of doing this work?
Oh, you know, you get, you know, people get sicknesses, you know, everybody gets MRSA, or, you know, it's things like that happen. Just you end up, like your car will break down mysteriously, or, you know, things of that nature. It's just things of matter, because they can mess with the material part of things, but can't really do anything about the spiritual end of things. Typically in that realm of interference. Yeah.
I understand. That's what we call it on this show, is interference, based on Carissa Conti's work. She wrote a book on this type of dynamics. And Peter, you said you're staying in Michigan with a woman named Mary Hardy, and that rings a bell with me. She's famous for having that giant pyramid in her backyard or on her property. I've read stories about Navy intelligence visiting and being very curious about what she is doing. Can you give listeners some background about Mary?
Yeah. Mary was just a typical Michigan housewife, had a couple of kids. One of her sons was autistic, and she's quite intuitive and got a message from Spirit that told her that if you want your son to be able to function past the age of 10, he would require a pyramid. So she acted on that and found this man, Keith Killick, up in Canada, who is kind of like a spiritual bodhisattva. You know, he's a bodhisattva, an enlightened person that also was an engineer. He did a lot of the research in developing the LED lights. Kenneth Killick was developed this design for their pyramid, which is based on the work of Wilhelm Reich. So the pyramid is actually an orgone generator, an orgone box. Now, whenever you put in a pyramid like this, it puts off a plasma charge. The military knows what's going on. They can see, through infrared imaging, they can see plasma emissions. So they knew that there was something up here. So the Navy came to visit one day, and they parked their cars down the street and walked up and knocked on the door and kind of acted like salesmen for Encyclopedia Britannica. It was like really obvious these guys are from the Navy or whatever, from military. And started asking questions about the pyramid and what are you doing with it and all kinds of stuff. And the neighbors later told her that there was a Navy car, that these two guys had a Navy car that they parked down the street and came walking up and talked to her. So they investigated her, and they're kind of right now the pyramid it's been here so long that they make adjustments for it. The pyramid itself is also a water geometry. 51-51.
Mm-hmm.
50. It ends up being 103.2 if you add those two angles together. So that's the bonding angle, essentially the bonding angle of water. That probably is the ideal angle rather than what modern science says is the 104. So this pyramid here, although it's about 18 feet tall, 24 feet on its base. Not huge. It's bigger than some, but not big as like the Great Pyramid. That is a bonding angle of water. So like in the case of the Great Pyramid, just by way of example, the Great Pyramid had a moat around it, and the walls of it were very smooth, right? So the moat of water would evaporate during the day, rise up the smooth surface of it and create a kind of a donut, if you will, a donut loop. And then the interior charge of it would throw up a column of electricity into the ionosphere, and the combination of the two would have generated a thunderstorm every afternoon. So I think the pyramid probably had many purposes, but one of them was to make it rain. The pyramid has been kind of attractive. We've had tornadoes coming straight at it, and we've used this, Holy Grail vortex, or Mary used the Holy Grail vortex in order to take down these tornadoes. So we watch weather maps. Here's this tornado coming right at the pyramid, at the pyramid. Then it just collapsed and no longer. And Mary's son built his own pyramid. He's now 52 and functioning, well.
Great.
John knows more about pyramids than anybody I know, just how they operate, what the energetic structures are and different vortice patterns that are within it. And he's really cool.
Peter, I wanted to ask you, I've not heard of a pyramid shaped orgone accumulator based on Reich's work. And it's interesting. I just want to tell listeners, I had no idea that Peter Champeau has been working with orgonite staying with Mary Hardy, and I had no idea that that pyramid structure was also an orogone accumulator. On the show, we've been talking a lot about orogenite and orogone energy in Wilhelm Reich's work. And it's just really interesting now that this is what you've been working with and involved with for the past, maybe, would you say, year?
Yeah, a year intensively, you know, focusing on this Nature's Cathedral project. We're using the two pyramids as a way in which we communicate with the waters of the Great Lakes, because it's, you know, it's a molecule of water. A pyramid is a physical manifestation of a molecule of water. So this particular alignment that was generated just haphazardly, John, well, I'm going to buy this piece of land, so he put this pyramid in, and you draw a line between the two, and it goes from the center, the extended alignment of this line between the two pyramids goes from Sault Ste. Marie down to New Orleans. Interestingly enough, for right through where the height of the eclipse is down in Tennessee, Kentucky, down there in that knot of rivers. So we're connected directly to Sault Ste. Marie, and it's part of the it's also that length between Sault Ste. Marie and New Orleans is the same distance as New Orleans and Lake Itasca, which is the headwaters of the Mississippi. And if you generate an arc, if you will, from a radius from New Orleans through Lake Itasca and Sault Ste. Marie at the center of the Great Lakes, it generates this arc of which is the fan of the Mississippi River drainage area. You know, Ohio and Missouri, and all those rivers that drain into the Mississippi. And you have like Grand Teton is on it, and you have the Black Hills are on it, and you got the Four Corners of the Southwest on it. So this arc across the country is really, what we're working with here with these alignments is to generate a nature's cathedral, not only out of the Great Lakes, but, out of the whole country, create a sacred space out of the whole country by using these geometries and using the resonance of water and the resonance of love, because you really can't get very far unless you're working with this love energy. It really doesn't catch on with nature. You really have to fight to get the evil in there, because it doesn't want it. But love, it just woo, I'll take that any day of the week, and nature really responds quickly to that. And so we have like an antenna system where we're communicating these prayers of love, these frequencies and resonance of love out to the entire Mississippi River basin and waters of the Great Lakes and everything in between. So,
Peter, the solar eclipse occurred today and marked a line across North America. Could you talk about the significance of this track in terms of maybe telluric current and the work that you've been doing?
Yes, Jeff. It's quite a remarkable path it's taking. So one of the most significant places that it goes over is the Grand Teton. Now the Grand Teton is very close to the Yellowstone caldera. They kind of work together. One's an innie and one's an outie. Kind of thing, whenever you work with vortexes, there's a upshoot and a downshoot vortex.
Mm-hmm.
So meaning there's a loop that happens between the two. Usually a medicine wheel or a pyramid is on an upshoot, so the energies from the earth are going up, and then an obelisk or a mountain is often a downshoot, where you have this pointed form that takes that energy and then grounds it back. So you get this looping quality between the two. So the Grand Tetons and the Yellowstone Caldera, work together as a upshoot downshoot dynamic. Now the eclipse is going right directly over Grand Teton, and the Grand Teton is at the center of another Earth ring, a 1,400 mile Earth ring that is marked by Cascade Mountains in California and in the Northwest, in Seattle and Mount Rainier and Mount Hood and such as Mount Shasta, Mount Whitney, Lake Tahoe, go through Sedona and some of the native sacred peaks of Blanca Peak. And then it hits out in the plains. It hits all these confluence of rivers, Banff, Lake Louise up to the north. So this is this great western wheel, if you will, and it's also the blast zone of the Yellowstone supervolcano. If that thing were to ever go off, the devastation area would be the same as that ring. And curious enough, the lake that's underneath, the lava lake that is this Yellowstone super caldera, is about the size of Mexico, and it's contained within this circle. And this circle itself is the same size as the Earth's inner core, which, curiously enough, is the same size as Pluto. So there's this like a visceral connection between Earth's inner core and the surface here. This particular dimension of Earth ring is found pretty regularly around the planet. The coast of China is marked by the same ring centered on the Three Gorges Dam. It's also this 1,400-mile-wide Earth ring. A little concerned that the gravity field, the pull that's going to be placed by the combined Sun-Moon-Earth alignment might do something to the Yellowstone caldera. So that's tricky business.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that's of significance is that it goes very close to the New Madrid Fault, where its absolute maximum is just a short 100 miles away from where the maximum passage is. So those are two highly energized telluric zones. So, if you will, Earth energies are fueled by volcanic energies. So you'll find a lot of ley lines coming off of granite domes and old volcanoes, but you also find a lot of them coming out of real volcanoes. So right now, the Yellowstone caldera is showing a lot of earthquake activity. It has a lot typically, but it's quite an uptick right now. And that's because the ley lines that are fed by the caldera have been severed by fracking and coal mining and roads and pipelines and things of that nature. So there's a need to connect these ley lines. Now, draw off that excess energy that's building up in Yellowstone, because it is what fuels the ley lines. Now, eclipses are something that when an eclipse happens, Earth energies collapse. The ley lines disappear to nothing. The vortexes just close right up like a flower closes up at night or something like that, or the birds go to sleep and everything kind of drops down, the energies drop, and when that happens, there's an opportunity for new energies to be introduced. Along these lines, we're planning, there are many spiritual groups that are group meditations, all kinds of stuff that are, they're using this opportunity of the eclipse across the United States to get this, once and for all, get this new paradigm happening and get it part of our new way of living, and get over this culture of profit through suffering that we're so immersed in. And so eclipses really give you an opportunity to get back into alignment, so you have, sun, moon, and earth core, so going through all those things. And then when you have this maximum very close to an active geophysical uplift of the New Madrid Fault, that those are plutons coming up, which are like a slow-moving volcano that's pushing up through the Earth's surface. And so it's this opportunity to change the frequency that's being broadcast via the ley lines. By using the eclipse, we can change the world, and we're planning on doing that.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to see what transpires as a result, and fingers crossed. Peter, if you would, could you tell listeners, if they would like to get in touch with you, how they do that?
Yeah, you can just Google my name, Peter Champoux, C-H-A-M-P-O-U-X, and I'm at Gmail. I have a website, Geometry of Place. geometryofplace.com, so you can check me out there. But really, Googling me, you'll be able to find my stuff. And I have a YouTube channel called geometryofplace.com. You'll see a lot of my videos there. Let's see, I think Mary Hardy also has a channel, a YouTube channel, where a lot of her teachings are on there now. Either that's Saqqara or Temple of Saqqara, or which is what they call this place.
Well,
yeah, you can find out what we're doing through those portals, and contact me through that through my email. That's the best way to get a hold of me. I don't carry a cell phone around with me. I I have one, but it's kind of, I leave it at home all the time. But
okay, Peter, that you've joined up with Mary, I would imagine that you would be an intimidating force now to reckon with out there in Michigan, and in a positive way. I had no idea you had done this, and it's something I definitely will follow up with you and Mary. And I'm just blown away that you're involved with Orgonite and working with it, and I couldn't think of a better person to be using Orgonite out there to help harmonize and heal ruptures in the Earth energies. And I want to thank you again for being on In Other News.
With pleasure.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Join me again Monday, 11 p.m.